Bombs, powder keg of dynamite. We got this hockey on roll tonight. I said, don't be slow. The boy in the back, you know. I said, don't be slow. Ready to rock and roll.
Welcome to another episode of Leafs Lounge, a hockey podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Travis. Travis, how's it going?
Pretty good, Adam. Not as good as Sheldon Keefe, but pretty good nonetheless.
Going to warn our listeners, I have the hiccups tonight, so we're going to power through that. We're going to try to as best as we can, but a lot has happened since the last time we sat down to talk about the Leafs.
Things we have hoped. What's going to happen, Adam? Not going to lie. Things we hope are going to happen.
Travis, as of this recording, it's, 3 days before Christmas, right?
Yep.
And we had said that our hope was that Mike Babcock would be fired as a Christmas present to Leaf fans. And we got that, but much earlier than we expected.
Well, thank goodness that it happened early too, Adam, because I'm not sure if I said this on the podcast or if it was after we were talking that we didn't record, but I was worried that they wouldn't make this move until late January, middle of January, which we would be in too big of a hole. Just a quick thing on the numbers here. With Babcock, the Leafs were 9-10-4. They scored 3.13 goals a game. They gave up 3.43. They were only 17.6% on the power play. And with Keefe, it's a smaller sample size, 13 games. But still, they're 9-4.
Well, 10-4 now.
10-4 now. Yeah. They got a 3.69 goals for, up a whole half a goal. They got 2.62 goals against, so down almost a full goal. And their power play, instead of 17.6%, is 31.8%. The least problem is they're not drawing enough penalties. But all the numbers have been great. I read another stat there earlier that Matthews, Marner, and Tavares are all in the top 10 in even strength ice time. Like, they're getting out there all the time.
Right.
So he's running the big dogs, and that's something we didn't get as much. And he actually has a third line that I really enjoy. I don't know how they'll break him up, but it seems like a really good checking line that could cause a lot of trouble. The Kerfoot, Engvall, Mikheyev line. I think that's such a great third line. We'll get into more into detail, I guess, about all that. But just some big changes that happen exactly when they need it to. And I'm going to give Carl Dubas a bit of credit there. He kind of mismanaged the backup goalie situation, but he was not scared to make this move when he thought the team needed it, and I'm just going to give him a thumbs up for that.
Yeah, the impressive thing to me is style of play, and you know what I've noticed is the exits out of our zone are very impressive. That you know forwards are staying closer to the defenseman and providing an out for a defenseman, which is a big help. You know, it seems like a small, common sense kind of thing, but when you see it put into practice, it's just miles difference than what we're seeing under the Babcock regime, because you know a forward would blow the zone before we even had the puck. But now they're closer together, and the exits out of the zone are a lot crisper, a lot cleaner, and a lot quicker, which is helping our transition game. Another thing that I'm noticing is their desire and willingness to hold on to the puck a lot more.
Yes, Adam, thank you for bringing that up, because that's something I wanted to touch on a little bit. Nylander did this a bit when he first came in and started playing with the Leafs, mm-hmm. and you could tell how much it pissed off Mike Babcock. He used to hold the puck, let most of his other linemates change, fling it back down to our own D, and then get off, and we would still have position rather than you did the standard normal thing. Like, I played a lot of hockey,
right?
Some high levels, enough to have some coaches, and all you ever hear is when you're getting ready to change, when you hit that red line, dumping in, everybody come off, but you're giving up possession of the puck. You're letting the other team attack you right away while you're changing, which I never understood. It didn't make as much sense to me because you're on the defensive even more. You're just coming onto the ice.
Yeah.
But now, the way the Leafs do it, they fire it back to their defense. Forwards change, their defense changes. They do a whole change while trying to keep possession of the puck. It's very refreshing. It's nice to see. And it has resulted in some chances that it's just a cool, like you said, different style of play. And I just got to come in there, man, like trying stuff like that. Love it. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're still dumping it in when, you know, the situation necessitates it.
Yes, not all the time.
But it's far, far less frequent than before. And you're right. It doesn't really make sense when you think of the fact that if you dump it in, you're just giving the puck away. If you dump it in and you all go change, you're just giving the puck away. So
it just seems like you're doing things a bit more intelligent rather than, okay, this is the way they've always been done. So let's do them. Like we were talking off air about the Raptors made a 30-point comeback here today, and a lot of the defense on it was pressure, like old high school tactics that you don't ever see used in the NBA anymore. Coaches right. don't do it, and I just like that kind of stuff. Like that, you're not afraid to try new things that may not conventional, not normal. Like just to try it, like instead
and
of being
you,
like,
at that point, what do you got to lose, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Is this why did you just because we did everyone does it this way, so we're going to do it this way? Okay, Mike Babcock, things might need to change. You might have to see maybe let's not scratch Justin Hall 75 freaking games last year when he's a perfectly capable. And same thing with Josh Lebo in Vancouver, doing really well for himself.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's injured now, but yeah.
But still doing really well. He when he's playing, like he's like you. And if anybody heard anything you've ever said, dear God, you love Lebo. I bet you go back and look at tweets. There's tweets there from you saying, "How is Lebo not playing? How is he not in the game?" You say that to me so much, and I was honestly like, you know, the numbers say yes, but I think Adam's overreacting a little bit. Then he goes to Vancouver and is almost a point of game player.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, just wasn't done right in Toronto for the last little bit when Babcock was there. And it's just nice to see so many new things. And Freddie has been amazing.
The guy is just, I mean, you know, he had one off night and the Leafs bailed him out finally.
It was nice to see.
Against New York. You know, he wasn't having his best game. But the Leafs came through and won the game for him, which was a refreshing change of fortunes. It's usually been the other way around. But, you know, you mentioned Justin Hall. And what a revelation he is.
Oh, my God. I have shut down defenseman playing perfectly with Muzzin. I love it.
And I just love the fact that he's positionally sound 99% of the time. He uses his size, but it's not necessarily in the manner of delivering a bone-crunching hit. You know what I mean? It's just more body positioning and just, you know, using your weight to leverage your opponent off the puck or on an angle where he can't get the puck.
The Connor McDavid separation is a very good example of that. That's basically illustrating exactly your point. He has a very high hockey IQ, and he's making plays quickly And I, like you said, I couldn't be more impressed by him. And I think Travis Dermott is trying to take Jake Gardner's place for frustrating me at times and also having a lot of talent at times, because I see him get a cut a lot, but I also see him making a lot of plays. So I guess with a young player, I guess you got to take the bad with the good. But I know one thing, he's not playing himself into any sort of contract that we can't afford at the end of the year.
Definitely not. Barry having a lesser than stellar season is a help to us at this point in time. But just to go back, to the McDavid versus Hall the scenario. I mean, McDavid and Draisaitl had a combined 1 point, while Muzzin and Hall were responsible for checking them, and that is insanely spectacular, because when you think of the damage that those two players have done to just about every other team in the league this year.
They have been.
I mean, let's be honest, those two players are the Edmonton Oilers.
Oh, yeah.
And this is why Edmonton is struggling now, because if you can shut them down, you've beaten the Oilers. Thankfully, they got their act together the other night and beat Montreal, which helped us. So good, thank you, Edmonton. But the point is, they're a two-man team. They're a two-headed monster, and Justin Hall and Jake Muzzin did a fantastic job. And I love, the pairings, the deep pairings under Sheldon Keefe's watch, and the fact that he was willing to change them up, whereas if we were still in the Babcock era, it would still be CeCe and Riley as a top pair.
Oh, my God, still 100%.
And I think CeCe is benefiting with less minutes, in actual fact. He's still not, by any stretch of the imagination, my favorite defenseman. And he was very soft on Bertuzzi last night, which prevented Hutchinson from getting a shutout. But compared to what he was before, let me put it this way. I find CeCe more tolerable under Keefe than I did under Babcock.
Is the Jake Gardner conundrum, Adam? Like, I don't think Jake Gardner is an absolute terrible defenseman.
No, he's so just not top two.
No, and Mike Babcock, anytime he had him, that was it. He was going after all the time. And the same thing with, like, when you seen Phaneuf back before Babcock. And Phaneuf playing 28, 29 minutes. He can't do that. 18 to 20 minutes a game would have been perfect. Not just 25. He's not Shea Weber. He's not Roman Josi. He's not, like, and you just keep doing it. And same thing with Babcock, like you said, it would have been Riley and CeCe still to this day, no matter how they would be in the standings. It blows my mind.
By the way, I think we can safely say that under Babcock, back in the day, if we didn't have Riley, you probably would have seen Gardner and Marinson as our top
pair. Oh, God.
Right. And you know I'm right, because he loved those two guys.
Yes, you're 100% right.
You mentioned Matthews. And Matthews, Marner, Nylander, all getting top-tier minutes and being in the top of the league standings in terms of 5-on-5 on-ice play. And what a difference that makes. I mean, Matthews, I don't know how this is possible, but he looks even better than he did with Babcock.
I got a few stats for you here. So Matthews currently leads the Leafs in goals, points, and goals for percentage. Is second in primary assists and Corsi, and has the lowest rate of goals against any forward in the top nine.
All right, so do you have his point totals? Like, what are his point totals? Do you have
I don't have them since since Keefe.
No, but total point totals.
Okay, I can get that for you in a second. I also want to state that Nylander is now on pace. Nylander is now on pace for 30 goals as well. Okay, so
that's a big difference than. Yeah, get their two stat lines. I want to get their.
So for all you people that said we should have traded Nylander last year, I'm not against trading him in the long run, but this is the best strategy. We had to wait for him to get his value back.
I have another trade. I have two people that I think the Leafs may want to consider pulling the trigger on, but we'll get to that later.
Nylander has 27 points in 37 games, 13 goals and 14 assists. And Austin Matthews has 23 goals and 18 assists for 41 points in 37 games.
That is insanity, my friend. Because we're looking at, if he gets two more goals before the 41 game mark, we're looking at a potential 50 point season or 50 goal season.
He's on pace to easily break that right now because he's on 37 games. And he has 23 and 18. So it'd be nice to, I'm going to be honest with you, Adam, just as much as the 50 goals, I want to see him play close to a full season.
Yeah. Oh, that's first and foremost, because we haven't seen that yet.
No, and it worries me that he'll break down in the playoffs. So I'd like to see him get a full season under his belt. And I think that'll give us the 50 goals that we desperately want from the Leaf.
But you know what I like the last couple of games in terms of Matthews as well? I mean, the goals that he scored have been, you know, what else is new? Highlight reel, you know, phenomenon.
Oh, that 30-30-31.
Well, yeah, I'm just going to say it because I think I said it on, I think I posted this on Facebook in, against the Buffalo game. He made all five guys on the ice, including six if you include the goalie, and I'll include the goalie. He made all six Sabres on the ice look like a brothel of cheap hookers, because he undressed them all with ease.
Oh, it wasn't even fair.
It was just disgustingly good. But what's impressing me more than those awesome goals is, especially in the last, I would say, 2-3 games, his overall defensive plays. Like, there have been times when he's backchecked, used his body, which is, you know, 6 foot whatever, pretty big guy, to maneuver the opposing player off the puck and come up the ice and make a play.
Yeah, he's been very impressive like that. And I honestly think that I don't think many of these guys like Babcock, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think that's it. You have to look at the bench and you see them smiling and you're like, wait a minute, what is that?
They're smiling. They're having fun.
Yeah.
I like to give.
Can't use that word.
Keep some credit too, because Nylander and Kapanen were both playing like bums last night, and he benched them in the second period and put Matthews with Marner in the third, and it paid off big time.
And that's another thing I got to commend Keith on. He has no fear of shaking up the lines.
No, like no, especially when it's not working. You'll get back on the game tomorrow against Carolina. You'll have those three guys together again, and players will know and understand more then, instead of the Babcock way where you goes on fourth line, you're like, I might be here for 15 or 20 games. Whereas with this, it's like, it's not working. We're going to try something different, but don't worry. You're still going to be back. You're going to get when you got something to give me better than what you're giving me, you'll be back out there.
My thing is this, Travis. I mean, there were times where Babcock would change up the lines, but he'd do it with 5 or 6 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
When, let's be honest, for those guys to get chemistry together with 5 or 6 minutes, nearly impossible. And at that point, it's too little too late. Under Sheldon Keefe, he would do it. He will do it, as early as the second period or at the start of a period. So he gives the players time to adjust to each other and they may still be able to make an impact.
Agreed, Adam.
Which is the way you should do it. Not, there's 5 minutes left. Let's try something different.
Yes, and I don't want this to be the hammer on the Mike Babcock podcast. Oh, I do. But I know you do. But it's not, we're not even being malicious or angry. We're just stating plain facts. Yeah. And
I'll state another fact if I could in honor of Mike Babcock. Did you know, Travis, that the Hunting Channel is number 393? In case you were wondering, there's a fact for you. Mike Babcock fact. Now continue what you were saying.
Let's hope I don't ever have to find that channel. It's just it, but it, what it became at a, it got to a point where he just put his head in the sand and was like, "I'm doing it my way, my way, my way, my way, my way." You're like, dude, you won one cup. Like, please don't be telling me about your gold medals because anybody could have. Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Anybody, ooh, let me pick Carey Price as a starter. Let me put Cindy Crosby with Bergeron, who played to get her back in World Junior. So it's Travis, not like.
Travis, I think you and I should coach the next entry of the NHL version of Team Canada.
McDavid.
Yeah, and we'll just say, okay, you out next. And then we'll probably, you know, win the gold medal.
I don't see Steve Eisman going around and saying like, "I won a gold medal. I blah 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 blah." Hear anything like that.
Yeah,
it's just, and the same thing with Ovechkin saying like, "I love the Ovechkin saying that to our group." You know what? I bet you Sheldon Keefe would say. I would say I think Ovechkin got worried about Washington Capitals, and we'll worry about Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
So I just, it's just a new, it's a new
as thing. As opposed to saying he's right. Well, we know he's right, but at least defend your. I mean, what Babcock failed to understand, I think, was that when Ovechkin, with players like Ovechkin say that, and there, I think MacKinnon made some comment or something similar, or Drew Doughty or whoever it was, when you agree with those players, yeah, you're throwing your players under the bus, but that doesn't speak very highly of you either, because. Breaking news, you're the coach of the team.
Well, I think that after some of the things that have come out, I don't think we need to speak very highly of Babcock, because I don't think we even talked about this off air. That list that he made Marner do, that was pretty effed up. Like, yeah. A sicko would do that, a psycho.
But my thing is, Travis, what is he, by doing that, by the way, if our listeners don't know, if you've been living under the rock, under a rock this whole time, or if you're part of the Mike Babcock fan club, let me break it down for you. When Marner was a rookie, he went to Marner and told Marner to compile a list of the least hardest working players, according to Marner. Now, Marner being a rookie and feeling the need to do what the coach says, Marner obliged, assuming that this would be something done in the strictest of confidence. And what did Elmer Fudd go and do? He decided to go and tell the players who were on the list that they were on the list. Now, thankfully, those players, who I believe were Nazem Kadri and Tyler Bozak at the time, did not hold it against Marner, but were pretty upset with
Babcock.
With Babcock, to the point where this came out a couple of days after that report, that Matt Martin basically went into Babcock's office and was screaming at him because he's an idiot and he shouldn't have done that. And so he's defending Marner, and much like he did on the ice. And things got so heated that Komarov felt the need to step in between them and break them up. Now, I don't know about you, Travis, but I would have paid good money to watch Matt Martin punch Mike Babcock in the face. And I'm sure Mike Commodore would have been there with popcorn as well. and then subsequently, you know, who did the Leafs get rid of? Matt Martin. All because he stood up to Mike Babcock in honor of Mitch Marner. For a player that advocates, I'm all about, you know, promoting the player's mental health, and we got to foster, you know, the mental health of the player. Yeah, well, how is that fostering the mental health of a player, or of your team, for that matter? Like, it's, I don't understand it.
I smell some bullshit from him, Adam.
Yeah, big time. Yeah.
I agree. It's just, I've never heard a tell of this ever, where you would make a player write a list of the people that don't work hard and then show all the players, he had you and you and you. And I love the Matt Martin flipping out part of it. I would have paid even more good money for Martin to fold Komarov up like a lawn chair and body slam him through Babcock.
Because, that would have been fun, yeah.
Or banged her heads together like coconuts because, I'm sorry, camera, get the F out of the way. I would have loved for Matt Martin to punch him because his contract wouldn't help us in the long run. We couldn't pay him $2 million. But, like you said, to ship him out after that happened, it just I can only imagine Babcock's smug face when he's traded him too. Oh.
Yeah, just, you know, I think, you know what came out of all this, aside from the Leafs playing better, I realized that I'd love to have either a beer with Mike Commodore or have him on this podcast to talk about Mike Babcock.
Oh, that would man. Be hilarious to listen to. I would love to hear the stories that he has because most of them would be true. I would believe in that.
For sure.
Like a couple things. He may never coach again. That's the first thing.
Well, if you ask me, any team that hires in Seattle, I hope you're listening, you're morons because, you know, in Seattle's case, they're going to, you know, the way the entry draft is, right? You know, other teams are going to leave players unprotected and then Seattle is going to pick their team based on those players. What player in their right mind is going to actively want to come play for your team if you have Mike Babcock behind the bench?
Oh, you're going to have to get castaways. Maybe that might be the best way he could coach is a bunch of castaways that are already angry. But yeah, like you said, I don't know a free agent that would want to go there. It also opened up a big can of worms. Bill Peters, he was on Mike Babcock's staff in Detroit. He went to Carolina to coach. He'll never coach again. He did all kinds of stuff in Carolina. He was coach of Calgary.
I think we just named the coach and the assistant coach of the Seattle, whatever they're called.
Well, I don't think Bill Peters will, because like, he kicked people and said a bit more graphic things. But this Babcock stuff opened up a can of worms. Crawford got suspended. Dallas fired their coach. It kind of set a whole revolution.
The NHL was looking like the U.S. politics there for a couple of days.
But just, I mean,
total disarray.
You can't do that stuff. Yeah. That's Mike Keenan level stuff. I've been saying since the Ollie story's out, Babcock to me is the 2000s version of Mike Keenan.
Where
you win sometimes, you win gold medals, you win Stanley Cups, but every person effing hates you. And even if you aren't mean to, let's say, superstar one here, he sees how much of a prick you are to the 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st person on the roster. And they're not happening anymore. They're not putting up with it. And it's good to see, because I think that a team that wasn't as strong would never, like, wasn't as strong and together as a group, I don't think they would have done half of what Toronto did do, in spite of Babcock.
Now, what do you think? Let's move away from Babcock.
Yeah, he's done.
Yeah. What do you think about Marner since he's come back? How do you think he's...
I think that the last four or five games, really, he's just getting his wits about him. I loved his pressure. He had a really good goal against the Rangers, closing up the back while knocking the puck out of the air. He's not trying to justify the contract anymore.
Yeah.
It seemed like at the start of the year, he was holding the stick a bit tight. He was holding on the puck a little bit too long, wanted to give the perfect pass, the backdoor tap-ins, wanted to just show everybody that I'm worth the money. But I think since he's come back, he's out of his head, and I've been loving him, especially the past four or five games.
Yeah, at this point, he seems to have the mentality of just relax and play, and that is the best thing for him. The only thing I like from Marner, and it's part of, you know, especially after seeing, you know, a game like we did in New York, the only thing I'd like to see more of from Marner is for him to shoot more, because his shot is pretty impressive.
You're right, and what would illustrate your point to a T is the 2 hour one he had with Nylander. Everybody in the arena knew he wanted to pass Nylander. The defenseman knew he wanted to pass Nylander. Me and you knew he wanted to pass Nylander. Oh. Watching the game, Nylander knew he wanted to pass to him. So you could tell that he waited way too long to take the shot, and he didn't, like, he needs to be, like you said, take more shots and be more confident in his shot if people are going to start respecting that and giving the pass a bit more. Because everyone thinks he's going to pass at all times.
I mean, you love the fact that he's unselfish, but
oh yeah,
you want him to be a little selfish in this case.
Yeah.
What I think is impressive as well, Travis, in this 10-4 stretch, is our third and fourth lines.
Agreed. I'm glad we got there, because the bringing Engvall up, I don't think he should ever see the Marlies again. I don't care who comes back. I love him as a penalty killer. I love him as a third liner. He got a nice size to him. He don't hit, but he uses his size the same way Justin Hall uses his size to separate and be able to make plays. And him, Mikheyev, and Kerfoot are really clicking as a good third line. And our fourth line, even though we got a couple extra parts, it's still fantastic. Spezza has been playing well, especially since Babcock left.
Yeah,
Gauthier is actually scoring goals, like top corner goals. Like, where, what? Like, he had 2 goals in 2 games. What the hell?
I mean, did you see that one against Buffalo? Like, in my head, I'm thinking he's gonna shank this wide.
Well, I was expecting to go off over the glass.
Yeah.
And he scored, and it was just, and even Timoshov, I really love Timoshov. He seems like an annoying little gnat. But he can score, and he actually finishes his checks, which is nice to see.
Yeah, I agreed. And you know, all these guys have been good. I think Kerfoot is playing the strongest he's played, and you know, he's making the loss of Kadri's goal scoring in the last handful of games under Keefe. He's scoring himself, so that is mitigating the loss of Kadri a bit there. Engvall has been a revelation. I mean, not to me, because I've watched the Marlies and I've seen the guy do very well. But I just love the fact that in his first game, Keith's first game, and Engvall against Phoenix, right away, Keith had no concerns about throwing him out on the penalty kill. And the guy scores a shorthanded goal.
I know, straight out of a storybook. And what's also good to see is these AHL players that come up now from the Marlies, I don't think they're going to be nearly as tentative, nearly as scared to make a mistake knowing who's coaching. You got Keith there who helped bring all them up. He coached Nylander in the AHL. He coached Kapanen in the AHL. He coached a ton of the players on this team, Dermott, Hall, like it just list goes on and on. All the third, fourth lines. It's just it's nice to see like a good relationship with the players, and players not be scared to make mistakes. Like, you don't want them to make mistakes, but you also don't want them to ruin themselves just by thinking about making them.
But you also have to understand that they're young guys. They're gonna make mistakes occasionally.
Yes,
you just gotta accept that it's part of their learning curve, and if they make those mistakes, the first recourse should not be to staple them to the bench, you know. But in Bill Peters' case, that might be literal. but, to me, so we talked about Engvall, but Mikheyev is another one that I love this kid. He's big. He uses his size. He's got speed. You know, to burn, it seems. And that shot that he's got is lethal.
Oh, he definitely has a shot, and he has such a hard work ethic. He's a long stick for the penalty kill, which he's become very well on penalty kill when he gets out there.
Yeah.
But he's fitting in well. I don't know if he ends up getting 20 goals. I don't know where that's going to take him in terms of being able to sign him at the end of the year. But
They have to find a way with him. I don't think he'll skyrocket in terms of asking price.
I still think Adam, this team has a shot to do something special in the playoffs. I'm not worried about making the playoffs anymore. I just got to tell a little story because I skate on Friday nights with a group of people now for the last like 7-8 years. Majority of them are Habs fans.
Everybody makes poor life choices, and clearly they have.
I gotta tell you what. I came in Friday. That was the day Babcock got fired, and there wasn't every single one had such a smug face. Every single one's chest was stuck out at 20 inches. Every single one was saying like, "Well, here we are now." Well, everyone was talking about the Habs being And I never said anything. All I said was, I wanted this to happen. I'm glad it happened before January. I came in two days ago, and there was no more smug faces. There was no more chest sticking out. And all it was me laughing like an evil genius. They were all stood up talking about how terrible the Habs have been. And I just let out an evil genius laugh and said, "Well, here we are." Where I thought it was. I was like, literally not even a month. So remember that next time. Yeah. And we went in to play hockey. So I just want to say, like, it didn't even take a month for everything to come full circle and the Habs to realize their place.
Yeah, I mean, look, you got to give credit to the Habs. They won 4 in a row before they lost Edmonton. But at the same time, the way they won those 4 games, a lot of them were coming, you know, overtime wins and, you know, this and that. And let's be honest, they played Vancouver, who has shown recently that apparently they can't win a game. They played. I think they played LA in there, which let's be honest, LA is nothing to write home about. I think they played. I can't remember. There was another subpar team, but the funny thing with Montreal is they seem to have the most favorable schedule so far because. It seems like every time I turn around and they win a game, they're playing a team that's coming off that's playing their second of a back-to-back.
Yeah, I agree. And they caught at least twice and that very same thing. They haven't seen Freddie yet. They haven't even come close to seeing Freddie yet. And it's also pretty funny, all the things I heard that 10, 11, no, about 15 games ago about the Leafs having to leapfrog so many people in the Atlantic Division. The Leafs are currently second in the Atlantic Division, only trailing Boston. So I think everybody needs to calm down. And they were burying us. They were throwing dirt on us. So all the listeners, all Leaf fans, this is like a little premature, but not because we knew this would happen. We get to celebrate right now. We took all the hits, took all the mud that was slung about our team being terrible, and you can't win by having those 4 offensive players, and blah, 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 no defense, blah, 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 and we're second in the Atlantic. So just imagine if things were going, like things haven't been going good until the last, 5-6 games recently. So just imagine, like, we started last year, nothing bad could happen. We were winning everything. And all I heard was plan to parade. So yeah, I just love it this way because adversity always seems to be an element in any team's championship run.
Yeah. And imagine my thing is, imagine if Babcock, Keith started the season as coach.
That's what I mean. Like, that's a 23 games there. That's a lot of points.
I mean, think about it. We've won 4 in a row as of this recording, and as
or
of this
5, I thought it was 5.
No, it's 4 in a row, okay. And 6 of our last 7 as of this recording. That's impressive. No matter what way you slice it, I go into the mindset now going into a game. Where if we play the way we've been playing, they play the right way, we could beat anybody. I don't think there's anybody that's unbeatable.
I agree, Adam, and I didn't feel that way before. No. Like we were playing the Oilers. If we were playing the Oilers when we had Babcock, and the way we were playing, I would be like, okay, well, then we're going to lose on this one. McDavid and Drysdale's going to get 4 points each, and I'm going to be watching them pass around. But no, they thoroughly handled the Oilers, and like I said, just impressive to see.
And it really just it's just, you know, for anybody to say that wow, you know, to have criticized it, say it was the players, it was the team, it was the makeup of the team. Clearly, this Sheldon Keefe is proving that it wasn't the case. Coaching makes a big difference.
It does, and people underrate it at times, but morale in your locker room, that's all a thing. And be coach involves all that. Like, you just can't be an asshole and have everybody hate you and think that that's the way to go.
Yeah,
it doesn't work like that for every player. You got it, like, different personalities. You got to know what to do, what works on some, what works on others. You just can't be the same way for everything. So, like you said, it's all nice to see. It's just new, different way of doing things.
I never at this point would have, like I said, if you had asked me before the coaching change, what our trajectory was, you know, I was starting to lose hope. But now, like I said, I think that, you know, I think the team's only going to improve as we go forward here, because there's still, you know, there are moments where we do see where they slide back into some old habits from time to time,
mm-hmm.
but we're, you know, they're still a month in to the new coach or everything. They've still got a lot to work through and you know, to sort of erase those old habits. So that'll come as they keep playing for Keefe. So I think, you know, and even Keefe has mentioned this, there's still room to even improve from where we are now.
Oh, there definitely is. Just we see it with the way, and they're still getting used to Keefe's systems, his power plays, his penalty kills, all that kind of stuff. Even though they're in the same organization, as we can see, things aren't done the exact same between.
Well, they weren't. They are. They probably are now, but
yeah.
But they weren't being done before in that manner. And I got to give credit, Travis, to Michael Hutchinson, because he came in and played a hell of a game against Detroit. Now, yes, Detroit is at the bottom of the league, and yes, they only have 9 wins, and yes, they're playing crappy, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they had 2 breakaways in the first 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And they outshot us. And Hutchinson stood his ground and shut the door. And, you know, he's had some adversity. He hasn't had a good season so far up to that point. He was sent back down, right? And he's been professional. He's done the work. He's put in the work. And he deserved that win. He probably deserved the shutout. Thanks a lot, CeCe. And also the ref for calling an unnecessary penalty. Mm-hmm. But I digress. But he played an amazing game and a well-deserved first win, and I hope he can build on that. And if I was in Sheldon Keefe's position, I would play him, you know, in the next back-to-back, which is Jersey and the Rangers. I play him in the Jersey game and save Anderson for the Rangers. And get again, yes, Jersey is a lesser, you know, on paper in the standings, a lesser talented team. But I think that is, I think you want to put him in that situation so that he has a chance again to keep building on this first win here. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't even know where to begin with that, Adam. To be honest with you, I think that I think you're probably right there, to be honest with you. Just after seeing the attack that the Rangers have compared to the Jersey, I don't think there's a question that you should go with that if you could. I think that especially Hutchinson might have a bit of confidence now. And it was nice to see the team actually, I don't know about, like, go all out because it was a 0-0 between after two periods with Detroit. So I don't know if they put their best foot forward. But just see Hutchinson earn that win.
Yeah,
it wasn't the team doing it. So I think I don't ever question your goalie decisions for starting because you seem to be right on the money with them, and I hope they take that exact same plan. To be honest with you.
Well, good. We'll see what happens. But the other thing I wanted to suggest to you, Travis, and get your thoughts on. With the way guys like Engvall and Makhachev and you know, all these guys are playing, when Janssen comes back, would you, the way some of these guys that are on the third and fourth line player, clearly, they look higher than third or fourth line players, some of them. With the way these guys are playing, would you entertain trading either Janssen or Kapanen to improve defensively?
Yes, I would. It just depends on the deal, the salaries coming back, how long the salaries are there. But this is one of the things I was advocating, especially even before we signed Janssen last year, was you can replace him with players in the Marlies that are ready to go, and it seems like you could. I could easily see even a Timoshov playing in his role or more.
I think Timoshov would benefit from playing higher up in the lineup.
Oh, I agree. I also think that there's people like Trevor Moore who we haven't seen in a long time, but he was arguably one of our best forwards when he was playing, like just working, getting a puck, knowing his role, but still scoring some goals. So I think that we have a lot of depth up front, so to take a couple of the players that are not top tier, are not bottom tier, but in the middle there, and trade them for defensive help, I'm all for that. If you can, the right deal with the right, like, give me a Pietrangelo type thing, I'm all for it. To include that in a package, if you got to do first a prospect like Liljegren and Janssen to get Pietrangelo, sign me up.
Awesome. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think I'd be willing to part with one of those two guys to improve defensively for sure.
I even think that just before we ended, I think that even looking at that at the draft, I don't know if we're going to be able to keep both Janssen and Kapanen going forward with the salary caps the way it is. So I don't know. That might be an option to explore, regardless, even if it's not to help us now. I don't know if we could take them, like, going forward. So it'll be that's something that they should be thinking about, and hopefully there are people calling out of that.
Yeah. Well, Travis, that'll do it for this week. A much happier note this time around. Hopefully it'll continue, and this vibe will maintain the next time we get together and chat. I'm enjoying our Leafs. I'm enjoying podcasting with you on this show, and let's keep the ride going over the next set of games and into 2020.
Well, let's do it, my friend. I'm gonna thank Sheldon Keefe because this podcast could have been the beginning of us shitting on our Maple Leafs for months, but. Yeah. They turned it around. The boys deserve some credit, but Keith deserves a ton of credit, in my opinion. And like you said, I'm having a great time watching him and talking about him with you. I was so excited after they got to 8-4 with Sheldon Keefe. I was like, okay, I'm ready to talk now. I think this team is turning a corner, and it did. So I think we're going to have a lot of pleasant talks going forward as well, Adam.
Good to hear. I'm definitely hoping for that as well. We hope our listeners enjoyed listening to this one, and our fellow fans are as happy as we are. We'd like to say so long and good riddance to Mike Babcock and to our listeners until we speak again. We hope you have a good day, good weekend, and you'll probably hear this during or after the holidays. But Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays until we reconvene again. And always remember that no matter what, it's Leafs forever from the first goal to the last. So long, everybody.
Merry Christmas to everybody except Mike Babcock.
Mike Babcock.